This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I keep listening for more soil carbon news. It's not big on CNN or YouTube, but it could be big news for the future. And that's why I was pleased to find Courtney White has tied a lot of on-the-ground experience together for his new book, Grass, Soil, Hope. In a foreword, Michael Pollan wrote, "This book promises to stir up hope even among those made cynical by relentless bad news." Courtney White takes us on a journey through carbon country. Courtney, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much. I'm glad, happy to be here.
Well, let's start with a bit of an introduction of you for our listeners. Where is your home region, and are you affiliated with an organization?
Yeah, you bet. I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. And as I say in the book, that my background is in conservation. I was an activist with the Sierra Club for many years here in New Mexico, but I grew up as a boy in the suburbs of Phoenix, not thinking about kind of any of these issues. Soil carbon, the least of them. And my journey kind of wound around, and my wife and I moved to New Mexico, and I got involved with the Sierra Club. And I met a rancher in 1997 who was doing things differently on his ranch here. And he and I started talking about all the kind of fights between ranchers and environmentalists going on at the time, and conservation activities, and the way he ranched. He ranched differently. He moved his cows around differently. And we decided to start a little nonprofit in 1998 called the Kivira Coalition as a way to kind of bring some peace and find some common ground between conservationists and ranchers and scientists and other folks. We founded it, and I've directed it for 16 years. I turned the reins over to a young woman, Avery Anderson, here. She's doing a great job, and I set off to write books and follow carbon, follow the carbon trail, which led to the book.
We've had Alan Savory as a guest on Radio EcoShock. He pioneered the use of carefully controlled cattle herds to replenish carbon in the soil. What do you think of his work and technique?
Oh, yeah, we're big fans. Jim Winder, the rancher, was an early practitioner of Alan Savory's ideas. We know many ranchers across the West who practice, you know, some form or some variation on Alan's ideas. We as an organization kind of took it kind of a different direction, maybe up a level, and trying to tie progressive cattle management into kind of larger issues to do with local food production, grass-fed food. We ran a ranch for a while ourselves, trying to do conservation work. We've done a lot of ecological restoration in creeks, rethinking the way erosion happens and the roads on the land. So we kind of folded it all together, but kind of at heart were the principles Alan Savory pioneered, kind of using nature's original ideas, in this case how herbivores move and graze across landscapes. And we kind of taken all that basic idea of nature knows best, needs some help from us because we have some technology and other things. And that applies certainly to carbon in the soils. As I learned one day when I read a publication about how to build soil carbon through above ground management, and that's what kind of set me off on this journey through carbon country, as I call it.
So who are some of the other people who do say that building up soil carbon may be the best large-scale solution for dangerous greenhouse gas emissions?
Yeah, and so when I first heard about this, I did some research, and I found a couple of people right away. The most prominent is a professor named Ratan Lal, who's at, I believe, Iowa State. He's a soil scientist, and he's the one that kind of floated the idea years ago that if you increased the carbon content of soil, and that if anybody who's a listener is a gardener, you know what that is. It's the tilth, it's the carbon in the soils is what makes soil dark and rich and productive. He said through photosynthesis, through carbon dioxide being pulled down through plants into soils, through roots, if you could increase that carbon content somehow, he did the math real quick and said it has the potential to pull a lot of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and store it in the soils. And what's important is that the plants, through the sort of natural processes, will respire or breathe out carbon dioxide from the soil, microbes and all that kind of stuff. But if you can store more than comes back out, then you got a net positive. And so he started that ball rolling. And then there's a soil scientist in Australia, Dr. Christine Jones, who did a lot of kind of on-the-ground research, measuring soil carbon, looking at ranch management, farm management, said this is a great idea. She has a website called AmazingCarbon.com. And from there, a whole bunch of folks kind of pick up the idea. Darren Doherty, who's a permacultural expert in Australia, there's a group of northeastern farmers that started the Soil Carbon Farmers of America. It kind of snowballed quickly. We did a conference on it in 2010 called the Carbon Ranch. I tried to pull all these folks together, so we had Christine Jones and other folks come and speak about the potential for sequestering carbon dioxide in soils. And I got all excited by this, and I decided to take the idea and run with it. Ended up interviewing a lot of these folks for the book. And it's hopeful. It's not the answer to the larger problems, but it's certainly one key part of the climate puzzle, is how to pull CO2 naturally out of the sky and store it in soils. So we can do it. We don't need fancy technology. All we need is plants, photosynthesis, sunlight, water, and animals.
You know, I like the sound of that a lot better than geoengineering, you know, where we toss some chemicals into the sky and hope that makes up for our carbon sins. So where did you go? Who are the voices in your new book, Grass, Soil, Hope?
Well, I traveled across the country and also to Australia. There's actually quite a bit going on in Australia, both on the land management side and on the kind of policy side of things, at least until they had a change in government last fall where it was a big setback on a lot of fronts. But in California, there's a lot going on. I started with the Marin Carbon Project, which was a small ranch in Marin County that decided to scientifically measure carbon in soils, involving scientists at UC Berkeley doing some really interesting work. So from there, I went to a farm in New Hampshire, a young farmer named Doran Cox, who calls himself a carbon farmer, and what he's doing on his organic farm, biodiesel, organic, no-till farming. And then I went to Kansas and looked at cover crops. I went to New Orleans and Louisiana to look at wetlands restoration and what's called blue carbon, how to store CO2 in mangrove swamps and wetlands of the south. And I went to Australia to look at a bunch of new ideas in farm management and ranch management down there. I have a whole chapter on ecological restoration in creeks, which is a great place to store carbon in creek banks. I have a little profile of beavers. Beavers are nature's original carbon engineers. What beaver ponds can do when storing carbon in those soils of beaver ponds, peats and bogs and things like that, is huge. I mean, it's just giant. Unfortunately, we did a number on the beaver populations in North America, but they're coming back, and beaver are our friends, and they'll do all this work for free, which is what's great. Yeah, I'm with you. The geoengineering side of this is nutty. It's absolutely not guaranteed to work necessarily. However, we have photosynthesis, and it's only been going on Earth for about, 2 billion years? No, I mean, it's let's use these natural principles that we know that work and have benefits for everybody, food, animals, plants. Let's work on that side of it first before we start getting into high-tech adventuring.
I did not know that about the beaver. That's Canada's national animal, and now we have another reason why it should be so. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Courtney White, author of an important new book, Grass, Soil, Hope, A Journey Through Carbon Country, and this may be the best way to combat climate change. Courtney, let's get down to it. How much carbon can be restored to the soil? Is it really such a big deal?
I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. They've kind of, different folks have different numbers, but they're large numbers. I mean, the amount of CO2 that can be pulled down through photosynthesis into the soils, I've seen in California, for example, numbers that say you could offset all the transportation sector of California over a period of time by successfully sequestering carbon in soils. It's a little bit of a challenge on the management side, just to be honest with you. You've got to have rain. You've got to have plants growing, putting down deeper roots. If there's a drought on, this whole thing slows down quite a lot. It's all key to the what's called the carbon cycle. Earth is a giant carbon laundry machine, carbon out of the atmosphere through plants into soils. Eventually they come out of soils back into the atmosphere. This has been going on for a long time. By increasing the amount of plants that can pull down CO2 and deeper roots, we can actually suck up a fair amount of CO2. So the numbers are big. There's a lot of rangelands across the planet. It's the largest terrestrial ecosystem is rangelands. And if you can improve the carbon content or by 1 to 2% only, you know, from say 2% carbon to 4% carbon as has happened, the numbers attached to that are large. And it's exciting. I need to add one quick caveat though, because it's important. This is not the be-all and end-all of the climate challenge. We still have to cut greenhouse gas emissions on the front end of this. If they keep rising, this all gets harder for us. But what's neat about carbon in soils is that it's a way of mitigating on the other side of this. So we cut greenhouse gas emissions that are going up, and plants are a great way to pull that excess CO2 that's up there already down. And Dr. Jim Hansen, leading climatologist in the country, wrote back in 2009 that if we could do two things to help the climate crisis, one is to cut coal use to zero, and the other would be to rehab agricultural and forestry practices to soak up all that extra CO2. So I'm hopeful.
Well, you know, that's part of the problem. This can go the other way. We've been losing carbon from the soils for generations, and it seems like modern agribusiness is still really a source of carbon emissions rather than a helpful sink. If we do it wrong, it can go wrong.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you, and I want to emphasize to your listeners that we're not talking about industrial agriculture. We're talking about organic, regenerative, biological agriculture. Now, it's not obviously happening on the scale that we'd all like, but Rodale Institute in Pennsylvania has done the math on what organic can do for these systems. It's all good, but yes, at the same time, we have this large industrial food system that's producing a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. And we need to figure that out at some level. But what's nice about this was carbon is generally portrayed as the bad guy, right? Oh, we got too much carbon. We have this war on carbon. We have to cut our carbon. We have to, you know, that kind of stuff. And forgetting that carbon is the element of life. You know, we can't have life without carbon. It's the essential ingredient after oxygen for life on the planet. We're carbon-based life forms, all that, you know, kind of stuff. So the goal is to kind of turn the idea of carbon around to the positive. It's the same substance, but here's a positive way of looking at the situation. And it's not abstract. I mean, these things are happening on the ground in farms and ranches and wetlands, beavers. On a small scale, we need to scale it up, and that's the challenge. But at least we can start that conversation with this book and other books that are coming out about kind of how do we kind of rethink our relationship to carbon.
What would you say is new in your book, Grass, Soil, and Hope, that we may not have heard before?
Well, I think for many listeners, especially folks who live in cities, they don't understand that agriculture done sustainably can be an answer to the problem. We not just the source of climate emissions or greenhouse gas emissions. You know, when I go to conferences, somebody invariably kind of stands up and says, "What's the one thing I can do for the planet?" And almost always somebody says, "Well, stop eating red meat," you know, or reduce your carbon footprint through your food use. And kind of lost in that is that, and generally get this kind of negative image about our food system, when in fact there are positive elements to it. In fact, they can be part of the answer here if we know where to look, especially where to buy and where to eat. So I say to folks, it's not just red meat, it's where that red meat is from. Is it from a sustainable ranch or farm? Is it from a carbon farm or a carbon ranch where someone's, you know, intentionally trying to do the right things here. And I would sort of challenge listeners to think about where their food comes from in a carbon context. And so this is new. This is on top of organic. This is on top of grass-fed, kind of on top of all those things. It's now to think about the carbon element in food production. So, and it's more than that. You know, there's a lot of restoration activities. You said earlier that we've depleted a lot of carbon from our soils, and that's absolutely true through some bad land management over the decades. However, this is what's new, is that depletion is now an opportunity. So these soils have been depleted of carbon, and they're sitting there ready to soak up more carbon given the right management, meaning they depleted, let's say, from 8% soil carbon down to 2%. In Australia, it's down to 1.5%. What if we turned it around and filled it back up to, you know, 6, 7, 8% again? And they've done the math on that, and that's a huge amount of CO2, potentially, if we can change our management. So that's new. So that's all these problems become opportunities if we simply change our thinking first and foremost.
You know, you told us you were a Sierra Club activist, and now you seem to call that the conflict industry. Can you explain that?
Well, yes. When I was in the Sierra Club, and I met some wonderful people, we did a lot of good work, but there was generally a fight-em kind of mindset, you know, fight the mining industry, fight the cattle, you know, kind of fight, fight, fight. The environmental movement was missing these kind of common ground opportunities, practices, that achieved conservation goals as well as food production goals. They were just kind of leaped over in this kind of fight, fight, fight mentality of the 1990s. And when I met this rancher who was doing conservation work, and he liked wildlife and was putting water back in his creeks and producing food, I saw, okay, here is a win-win for us all. But I meant leaving that kind of conflict industry behind, where folks just kind of benefit from endless brawling, and try peacemaking, common ground kinds of things, again, kind of turning those negatives into positives the way that he did. It's worked. I mean, there's a lot less fighting and brawling between ranchers and environmentalists today. A lot of folks understand the value of working landscapes today, local food, grass-fed food, organic food produced by farmers and ranchers, protecting open space, all those kind of cool things. Now we add carbon on top of it. We got a pretty exciting equation. It means that the environmental movement has had to give up some cherished beliefs and kind of move along. Some folks haven't, some have. Same goes for the ranching industry. They've had to give up some things. And we're all trying to move forward together in these challenging times. And I'm seeing good progress, and I feel hopeful.
What could different levels of government do to help the process of capturing carbon back into the soil?
Yeah, this is kind of the $64,000 question. How do you turn this these great ideas, practices, into policy? And that's not clear yet. We need to find a way to incentivize carbon storage in soils, and that's going to need some kind of economic incentive. It'd be nice if the government would incentivize carbon storage. The quick answer to your question is, to be honest with you, a carbon tax. A carbon tax would reduce emissions on the front end. It would create a pool of money to pay folks potentially to sequester carbon in soils. I know the word tax is, you know, is a dirty word these days. However, I think sooner or later we're going to have to do something on the front end of this to deal with greenhouse gas emissions. And if you create this pool of money and pay folks somehow for sustainable practices in soils, you know, whether it's a direct payment or an added value payment of some sort, here's a win-win for the climate. And I know it's politically unfeasible today, but I'm hopeful that somewhere down the line, that policy side of it, that piece of it comes together and we can do something for all of us.
You know, I've been wondering, Courtney White, if there's a way to make soil carbon sexy so it can spread among young people the way it needs to. I mean, maybe Kim Kardashian could visit a farm and get her hands dirty or something. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, this is the other challenge. It's not sexy. It's soil. It's, you know, it's dirt. You know, and it's hard to kind of give it a public face. That's what I tried to do in the book. Was try to tell a compelling story about all these folks doing cool stuff. Yeah, how do you capture the public's attention? How do you, that's kind of what we're all sort of struggling with now. It's easy to demonize and make negative images of things. Folks get excited. When you do the positive side of it, it's a little bit harder story to tell. And we haven't quite figured that out yet. I don't think Kim Kardashian is going to visit a farm anytime soon. I hope maybe she will. I don't know. How do you get the media interested? All I can think of, to be honest with you, is in the background is the kind of growing crisis that we all feel. At some point, that just has to kind of translate into action. And then what are the responses? Well, look, hey, all these neat farmers and ranchers, young people. I tell you right now, the young folks I know, and we run an apprenticeship program here at our organization, get it. You know, they get organic, they get local food systems, they're well educated, they have a lot of technology at their fingertips. The carbon thing is kind of coming on, they understand it. Doran Cox is a young farmer, he's chapter 2 of the book, and he uses the internet and the computing power to measure the carbon in his soils, and you know, he's trying to sell it as a added value to his products. I mean, it's all these pieces are there. All the elements are kind of in place. Young people are interested in this. We just need to figure out how to make it work economically. And, you know, you're not going to get wealthy on soil carbon. You're not going to be Donald Trump of soil carbon. So we have to kind of get past that. But you certainly can be rich in other ways by following these kinds of models. So,
we've been talking about the battle to change our social game plan to put carbon back into the biggest bank, the soil. The problem and the solution are illustrated, as you've heard, with real lives in the new book, Grass, Soil, Hope, A Journey Through Carbon Country. We've been talking with the author, Courtney White. Find links to all this in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Thanks for joining us, Courtney, and I appreciate you getting the book out there.
I appreciate your interest in it, and thank you very much for your time.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio Eco.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.